Hello and welcome to a very special one-year anniversary podcast. This is Joel Dunning with the CTS NetBeat edition 52. And in this, we have an extremely special guest, Paul Sargent, and I'm so excited to have him as our special guest. Also, there are some huge papers out this week. There is a mind-boggling increase in standard AVRs after TAVA. Look out for that. It's incredible. Microplastics are killing us. We're finding them in atheromas. This is a New England Journal of Medicine article you have to know about. And solitary fibrous tumours are not as good as you think. And in this very special one-year anniversary podcast, I'm going to announce the three winners of the Residence Video Competition. So stay tuned for the full edition of the CTS NetBeat podcast. Thank you very much for tuning into this one-year anniversary podcast. We've been doing this for 52 weeks now, and I hope you've been enjoying it. And thank you for logging in every week to hear what goes on in the world of cardiothoracic surgery. And we thought for the one-year anniversary, we would have a very special guest, and there is no more special guest than Professor Paul Sargent. Many of you will know him. He's had a huge, long, and illustrious career in cardiothoracic surgery from Leuven in Belgium, an amazing trainer, president of EACS, president of CTSNet, creator of CTSNet, in fact, 25 years ago when he had the vision to set up a web-based portal for training in cardiothoracic surgery 25 years ago when everybody was thinking, what the hell is this strange sort of worldwide web? And yet he'd been a programmer prior to being in cardiac surgery, which is really interesting. So you think if that was 25 years ago, he'd be sitting on his laurels relaxing, but none of it. He has created some incredible digital portals for training in cardiothoracic surgery. I was blown away when he showed us all at EACTS his low fidelity way of teaching distal anastomoses. He used to get people to do 1,000 distal anastomoses on using just some very simple cheap plastic before he'd even let you stitch a single patient, and showed amazing outcomes with that. But he's really taken this to the next level. So I'm so delighted to be welcoming Paul Sargent to our podcast, to be our special podcast guest.
The apps discussed in this podcast are owned and operated by Medtronic and Johnson & Johnson.
Hello, and welcome to this very special one-year anniversary podcast. This is The Beat. My name's Joel Dunning. And we thought for the one-year anniversary, we thought, who could we invite? Well, the absolute best guest we could have in the whole world is the one and only Professor Paul Sargent. Not only has he been EACS professor, but he actually created CTSNet, an IBM programmer before he came to surgery. He is our godfather. Now, you think that means, oh, God, he's going to be so in the past, but he has some incredible new digital learning initiatives that he is leading. It's absolutely amazing. And so, Paul, it's so great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining, and thank you so much for creating CTSNet. I wonder if you could start by telling us about these amazing projects you've got going, and thanks for joining us.
Well, I did not really create CTSNet alone. I created it together with Bob Riploegle, Peter Green, Tom Ferguson, you know, some very challenging, but it was created in Prague in a very dinner fashion style. Thank you, Joel, for the privilege to be interviewed by you. I mean, it probably should be me interviewing you, Joel, because I know you had a tough day today. I did not have a tough day in surgery today. We have been working on two different projects in the last 10 years. The whole mission I pushed and pulled on my shoulders was, in fact, the failing in CV surgery, and let us focus on CV surgery. I know, Joel, you have a lot of thoracic interests also, but if you agree, we will focus on CV surgery. The mission that we CV surgeons globally, not locally, but globally, have failed to innovate our surgery. And we failed in the implementation of extensive and complete arterial grafting. We failed on the no-touch aorta. We have failed on the implementation of OPCAP. We have failed on annihilating the risk of stroke. We have failed on annihilating the early risk. And we failed on optimizing the late benefit after surgery. So there's a lot to blame. And of course, there's a lot of teaching activity that has taken place. But I have learned that, and I take a lot of blame myself. I start with blaming myself and then you blame the others. It's easier if you first blame yourself. Is that we have taught that you could learn easily. You could learn by see one, do one, teach one. And what we forget, and I heard that today, is that to train an F-35 pilot, a military pilot, it costs between $10 and $12 million to train one individual pilot. And we don't invest anything in the training of the residents. So I was confronted with the off-pump surgery from around the year 2000. And we were doing it nearly in every patient. When I said we, this is the all surgeons and all residents were doing off-pump. And we had daily guests. We had up to 1,000 visitors, visiting teams. In the beginning, one day, in the beginning, one person, gradually 2 days, 3 days, gradually a team, the nurse, the anesthesiologist. We gradually got better and better. But in around 2006, Alexander Albert, who was a fellow with me at the time, we did a study on the effect of proctoring. What is the implementation of after a team that has been there? It had turned out that it is bad. It had turned out that people travel. Oh, it's fun to travel, to take a plane, to take a taxi, to have, certainly in Belgium, a good beer and a good dinner and good food in the hospital staff restaurant. But the capture of knowledge and the issue of skills was failing. So when I got a little bit more time, I decided to focus on these two issues. I started studying the science of learning. I have not invented anything, but what I have done is I have studied. I'm a scholar. I know, Joel, you are a scholar too. I mean, fundamentally a scholar. And I like to study the science of learning. And I've learned that the process of learning a surgical procedure is basically three steps. Step one is conceptual learning. I'll explain later. The second step is simulation learning. So conceptual learning and simulation learning together, they form what is called induced learning. Induced meaning you grab something and it's induced. So it's an active not a passive process of you looking at the procedure. No, induced learning is an active process. And then the third step is organizational learning. Okay, so that's the science of learning, these three steps. What does it mean? It means that you must start with writing down the concept of what you do. It exists in different names. Some people call it standard operating procedures. But in the science of learning, it's called the concept. You must have a rich concept and write that down.
I remember sort of seeing all your making your trainees do 1,000 bottom ends and things, and I was blown away by that and your calm operating. But I'm sure people are listening to this going, how can I get involved right now?
John Kirkland. You know who John Kirkland is, but our younger viewers might not know that. He's the one making the book of cardiac surgery. My computer rests on it for the moment. If you allow me to, I will. This is the Kirkland, the Bible of cardiac surgery, and it can be used to bring the computer to the correct height also. John Kirkland told me that education must be free. If you want to do something new, for example, minimal invasive surgery or anything, you must build a concept. Don't invite people to come. Don't put a video on LinkedIn. Write down your concept. Write down the concept from the view of the perfusionist, of the view of the anesthesiologist, of the view of the scrub nurse, of the running nurse, their different tasks, the different interactions. Standard operating procedure means that, for example, in a shunt, it's 23 steps. Twice you need to interact with anesthesia during the placement of a shunt. It takes two, three seconds to place a shunt. But that's what SOP are. So that's conceptual learning. It turned out that the guests, they had no clue. They saw a resident, and most of my residents have become senior surgeons, and a lot are chairman of units. They saw a resident 28 years old do 5 arterial anastomoses off pump with 0 extra systole. And they talked about the news, and they talked, no. And never did they question, why do these young surgeons, why can they do that, to do an anastomosis in 1 centimeter airspace? Now, Joel, when you were trained, and when I was trained, certainly because the animals were still speaking when I was trained, the airspace, the space between our anastomotic surface and the roof, was 3 meters. So you could move with your needle holder all over the place. But today, the airspace has gone down to 1 centimeter. 1 centimeter, no. 90 degree angulated to your line of vision on a moving or unstable target. So that is a skill that you are not born with. The second project is called simulation learning. It's called My Virtual Surgery. And in that project, we train around 3,000-4,000 scholars a year. In the beginning as seminars, me traveling around the world, I've done more than 1,000 seminars. COVID made us change the world completely and move to webinars, simulation webinars. Very strict curricula. So the curricula are very strict because simulation training is not about a simulator. It's about the integration of a simulator, a curriculum, and the assessments. So my biggest problem in the webinars was, okay, I cannot travel anymore. How can I, from my farm where I live here, see what the guy on the Philippines is doing? And I want to see that at the 30, 40 micron level. It took us a while to figure that out because it needed to be cheap, affordable, effective. So what we do is we bring in a second electronic channel that comes on my phone. My phone is connected to my computer. So they take a picture in real time on the other side of the world, and in real time it comes on the screen, and I can show it back to the guy in the Philippines. So it takes 2-3 seconds and I can explode it. So we can really see 10-15 micron level. I mean, the sutures, if their angulation is fine. That has exploded with the webinars. Our program, My Virtual Surgery, is now implemented in the 50 largest academic units in the United States for all the three pathways. But we use it also for interesting challenges. For example, I know in the UK, you have an issue of a number of scholars who are doctors, but not yet have a number for training. So in that period, you want to evaluate them. Well, Bobby Yanagawa from Toronto, a charming and brilliant surgeon from Toronto, has asked me to evaluate trainees in Canada, from here, of course, in Canada, about their learning capabilities. So it's not just webinars, but we have a platform. So My virtual surgery is an online educational platform built very strictly according to the science of learning, where we use OSATS-based assessments in a stepwise manner. And we have annually around 4,000, 4,500 scholars on that platform. So that's step two.
Well, it's this is absolutely amazing work. And as ever, we've come very close to the end of our 15
rapidly,
minutes.
Rapidly.
Go for a rapid one, but...
organizational learning. It's the last step.
Yep.
So in the MyCV surgery, we've set up debriefing modules. So why do the military debrief every military flight? Why don't the surgeons debrief every military flight? And that's exactly what we've made. So we want to change people's mind. Organizational learning is debriefing. Organizational learning is databases where you look at the outcome. So not just the process, but also the outcome. And if the outcome is not beneficial for the patient, you change the process. Joel, it's more as a concept for somebody like you. It's more as a concept of changing the training, not investing 10 million in every single surgeon in travel, but in trying to improve surgery at the benefit of the patient. That's what is important. All the rest is not important.
Amazing. Well, on behalf of all the trainees worldwide, this looks absolutely wonderful. And I don't know how you've packed in so many things to your amazing career. We haven't talked about even 1% of what you've done. So thank you so much from all of us. Thank you for joining us here on this CTSNet 1 year anniversary podcast. And, you know, personally, I think we should check in with you every year because you're such a wonderful mine of information. Thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
We have some really amazing papers on CTSNet this week, and I think they're ones you really do need to check out. The first one is by the wonderful Vinay Badwa, Vino Tirani, Mike Bowdish, really, really impressive STS database analysis. And this is an analysis entitled Cardiac Surgery After Transcatheter Aortic Valve Replacement, Trends and Outcomes. So what they did is they took the STS database and they looked over 10 years, 2012 to 2023, to have a look at how many people are having surgical aortic valve replacement after TAVR or any surgery after TAVR. This is the world's biggest growing surgical operation, and it's doing an operation for a patient with a TAVR in it. Now, this isn't just growing a bit. This is the number you are going to want to quote. In the last 10 years, the frequency of cardiac surgery after TAVR has increased 4,235%. 4,235% in 10 years. It grows 144% per year and has done consistently for the last 10 years. So this is something that everybody needs to know about. We've been doing a series with Vince Gaudiani, check that out, to try and teach you how to more safely do that operation. So they had a look, they found 5,400 patients that had had surgery with a TAVR in. Basically, half of them had non-aortic valve surgery and half of them were having a surgical AVR after TAVR. But here's basically the headline. The headline's horrific, really. The headline is 15% mortality. Repeat, 15%, one in seven mortality of people having an operation who've had a TAVR. So this is not a safe operation. There's also a 4.5% stroke rate, and this is 5,457 patients. This isn't a little tiny series in one hospital. This is the national data set in the STS. This is insane. So it's really dangerous to have an operation with a TAVR. It's really dangerous if you have an operation not to do with the aortic valve. So if you need grafts and they didn't send you for bypass graftings before doing the TAVR, or you needed a mitral, it's still not safe. It's dangerous. So this is really important in this era when in California, 50% of people under 50 are having a TAVR instead of a surgical AVR. You know, we really have to highlight how important it is to think about the future operation. And if you're going to have surgery, you know, 1 in 7 is not safe. So great job, guys. Really important. This is in the Annals of Thoracic Surgery this month, and it's something that every cardiac surgeon needs to know about. The second paper that I think is mind-boggling is a New England Journal of Medicine paper out this month. This has come from Naples in Italy by Giuseppe Paolisso. Raffaele Marfello did his PhD on this. And what did they do? Well, they took a whole load of patients having carotid endarterectomies. 304 of them. They then took that piece of carotid artery and looked at the atherosclerotic plaque. They looked for polyethylene. They looked for PVC in it. They did electron microscopy, and pretty shocking. Well, it's shocking because it got into the New England Journal of Medicine. Firstly, they found that half of these plaques had quite decent levels of polyethylene and PVC in it. So they gave some exactly how many, 21 microns, but you know, there's quite a lot, basically. It was a headline thing. They did some electron microscopy and found jagged, edged foreign particles in there with lots of macrophages all trying to eat it. But that's not the shocking thing. They grouped it into two groups, the ones with plastic in their plaques and without plastic in their plaques, and the endpoint composite of MI, stroke, and death at 34 months is higher if you've got plastic in your plaques. So that's why it's got in the New England Journal of Medicine. So maybe now a lot of our atherosclerotic plaques are maybe being caused by microplastics, microparticles, and there's a mortality increase. So I think that's going to be huge in the next few years, and we're going to have to be telling our patients about it. And I guess in the next few years, maybe there's going to be an outcry because we don't seem to care that it's in our Cs, but I think when we find it's killing us and it's in our atherosclerotic plaques, that's going to be pretty important. So check out that amazing paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is linked on the STS CTSNet website today. And a little something for us thoracic surgeons, a nice little paper from Haller in Germany in the EJCTS this week. SFTPs, solitary fibrous tumours of the pleura. They're always my favourite because they're huge and you take them out and the patient always does really well. And you get to have a great picture and show off about how it was a football size or enormous. But actually, Niels Dorr, Christian Biancosino have actually written up quite a decent size series. These 74 patients and 20% of them recurred. I was quite shocked by this because I always thought they were completely benign, but they actually are categorized as sarcoma. And because 20% have recurred and they didn't do great, they're actually saying we should treat these a little bit more cautiously, especially pedunculated ones. And so we should be potentially a bit more careful with them, make sure they're out with a bit of a margin and follow them up well. So well done, guys. Really good job. So before I go and announce the residents winners of the video competition, let me hand you over to the CTSNet office to tell you what else is on the website today.
Are you following CTSNet on social media? If not, check us out on Twitter at CTSNet.org and Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook at CTSNet. For the latest clinical videos, surgeon interviews, industry webinars, and more. We want to hear from you too. Make sure to comment, reply, and retweet to engage with the vibrant CTSNet community. See you online.
So this is our 9th residents video competition. It's actually open to anybody as long as it's the resident that does the narration. They don't have to do the operating, but they have to do the submission. And every year we get fantastic, highest possible quality videos, quite often because we have some stellar senior surgeons that get their residents to edit the video and submit it. And actually, from a personal point of view, I think there is no better way to understand an operation than if you give them the video and get a resident to edit it, because they have to know the anatomy, they have to understand it, they come back asking questions. And I absolutely love giving residents videos to edit, because you really see them understand a procedure. Vastly different for them watching over your shoulder and nodding when you said, did you get that? They never do. So I love giving residents videos, and I think that's why this competition is such high quality. Anyway, let's go on and announce the winners. So in third place, from the University of Ancona, senior author Marco Di Uzzanio, a wonderful surgeon who we all know, but the resident is Michael Galeazzi. And the title of this is Hypertrophic Obstructive Cardiomyopathy, Anatomical Substration for Tailored Surgical Correction. But what a wonderful video. This is everything you need to know about surgery for HOCM. They've got beautiful pictures, they've got echoes, and a wonderful surgical video where you really, really get to understand what part of the myocardium you cut out. They also tell you how to cut out the correct papillary muscles. Great vision, great head camera, great editing, well done. And actually, that was the best cardiac residence video of this submission. So well done, you guys. In second place, a thoracic video, we have a beautiful video from the Institute Montessori in Paris with the wonderful Agathe Seguin-Givellet, a friend of the show, fantastic surgeon, obviously student of Dominique Gousseau, now taken over there as he retired. And they have presented with the resident Giovanni Mattioni a wonderful video of a robotic S1 right upper lobe segmentectomy. That group is famous for its segmentectomies. They do segmentectomy courses, they do visible patient 3D reconstruction, and they did a masterclass here of how to get exactly the right artery, exactly the right bronchus, and exactly the right veins and do the resection. They used bronchial segmental plane inflation, they used ICG, vascular segmental plane isolation, and did a beautiful job. And that is why they've come second in our residents competition. And the winner of the best resident surgical video of the year is from Temple University, senior author Sherry Erkman, and the resident is John Sadeghi. Well done, congratulations, guys. And the video is open cervical and robotic first rib resection for neurogenic thoracic outlet syndrome. Again, a beautiful video. They've got a great demonstration of the tests for neurogenic thoracic outlet syndrome, demonstrated really nicely. They've got a really lovely narration. They've got a cervical part of the operation where they got rid of a cervical rib, and then they did a robotic demonstration of how they got rid of the first thoracic rib. So really nice, really original, a great learning tool, and congratulations to them. You are the 2024 winners of the residents competition. We'll hold this every year, so look out for it, and we'll do this again next year. So get looking for the best video so you can win that coveted prize. So we're coming to the end of this slightly extended podcast. Upcoming events is, of course, 27th of April, AATS in Toronto. It's going to be a wonderful thing. STS workshop on robotic cardiac surgery, May the 9th. And there's a transcatheter heart valve conference on May the 10th in Greece. So look out for that. And I guess as my final honourable mention at the 1 year anniversary, I would like to say very big thank you to our CTSNet staff who slave all year round to create this. We've got Cam Lind, who finds all the papers and all the videos and puts them together in a script for me. We have John Janczewski, who does the video, who edits it, who makes me look less rubbish. And of course, thank you so much to Marita Jasper, our new managing editor, who is the boss and does everything to keep us all on side and is doing a great job. So thank you all. Thank you for watching to the end, and tune in next week for another edition of the CTSNet Beat podcast.